Side 2. Chapter 13. Laurie makes trouble and Joe makes peace. Laurie quickly realized that Joe was keeping a secret which she refused to tell him. But he guessed the secret was about Meg and Mr. Brooke and was annoyed that his tutor had said nothing. He began to make some private plans of his own. Meg, meanwhile, was busy getting things ready for her father's return. But a change suddenly seemed to come over her. For a day or two, she jumped when she was spoken to, and there was a worried look on her face. Then a letter arrived for her, and a few minutes later, Mrs. March and Joe saw Meg staring at it with a frightened face. "My child, what is it?" said Mrs. March. "It's a mistake. He didn't send it. Joe, how could you do it?" Meg hid her face in her hands and cried. "Me? I've done nothing," said Joe. "What's she talking about?" Meg pulled another letter from her pocket and threw it at Joe. "You wrote it, and that bad boy helped you. How could you be so cruel and mean to us both?" Joe and her mother read the letter which had been in Meg's pocket. "My dearest Meg, I can no longer hide my love for you, and must know your answer before I return. I cannot tell your parents yet, but I think they will agree if they know that we love one another. Mr. Lawrence will help me find a good job, and then, my sweet girl, you will make me happy. Say nothing to your family yet, but send a word of hope to me through Laurie. Your loving John." "That terrible boy," said Joe. "I'll make him sorry." But her mother said, "Wait, Joe. Are you sure this is nothing to do with you?"
"I never saw the letter before," said Joe. "But Mr. Brooke wouldn't write stupid things like that."
"It's like his writing," said Meg, unhappily, looking at the second letter in her hand. "Oh, Meg, you didn't answer it," said Mrs. March.
"Yes, I did,"
cried Meg, hiding her face again.
"Let me get that wicked boy," shouted Joe.
Mrs. March sat beside Meg. "Tell me everything."
"Laurie brought the first letter," said Meg. "He didn't seem to know anything about it. I was going to tell you, but I remembered how you liked Mr. Brooke and thought it would be all right to keep my little secret for a while. Oh, now I can never look him in the face again."
"What did you write to him?" asked Mrs. March.
"I only said that I was too young to do anything, and that I didn't wish to have secrets from you, so he must speak to Father. I thanked him for his kindness, and said I would be his friend, but nothing more, for a long time."
Mrs. March smiled and looked pleased. Joe laughed.
"What did he reply to that?"
"He writes here that he never sent any love letter, and is sorry that my sister Jo should play games with us like this," said Meg. "It's a very kind letter, but imagine how awful I feel."
"I don't believe Brooke saw either of those letters," said Joe. "Laurie wrote them both, and he's keeping yours because I won't tell him my secret."
"Go and fetch Laurie, Joe," said Mrs. March.
I'll put a stop to all this at once." Away ran Joe, and Mrs. March gently told Meg Mr. Brooks' real feelings. "Now, dear, do you love him enough to wait until he can make a home for you?"
"I'm frightened and worried," answered Meg. "I don't want anything to do with love for a long time, perhaps never. If John doesn't know about all this, don't tell him. And please make Joe and Laurie keep quiet."
Mrs. March tried to calm her daughter, but as soon as Meg heard Laurie coming back with Joe, she ran out of the room, and Mrs. March saw the boy alone. When Laurie saw Mrs. March's angry face, he guessed the reason. Joe waited outside the room as, inside, the voices rose and fell for half an hour, but the girls never knew what was said. When they were called in, Laurie apologized to Meg and told her that Mr. Brooke knew nothing about either of the two letters. "Please forgive me, Meg," he said.
"I'll try," said Meg, "but I didn't think you could be so unkind."
Laurie looked so sorry that Joe wanted to forgive him straight away, but she said nothing and refused even to look at him. When he went away, looking hurt and unhappy, Joe wished she had been more forgiving. She could never stay angry for long, so after a while she hurried over to the big house, taking with her as an excuse one of Mr. Lawrence's books that she had borrowed. "Is Mr. Lawrence in?" Joe asked a servant.
"Yes, miss, but you can't see him," said the servant.
"Why? Is he ill?" said Joe.
"No, miss, but he's been arguing with Mr. Laurie."
"Where's Laurie?" said Joe.
"He's shut in his room, and he won't come out."
"I'll go and see what's the matter," said Joe. "I'm not afraid of either of them." She went upstairs and knocked on Laurie's door.
"Stop that!"
shouted Laurie. Joe immediately knocked again, and the door flew open. She stepped inside before Laurie could stop her. "I've come to say that I forgive you," she said, "and I won't stay angry with you." "Oh," said Laurie. "Thank you." "What's wrong?" she said, seeing his unhappy face.
"I wouldn't tell Grandfather why your mother wanted to see me, because I promised her not to tell anyone," he said. "But then Grandfather tried to shake the truth out of me, so I came up here and shut myself in."
"I expect he's sorry he did that," said Joe. "Go down and say you're sorry. I'll help you."
"No, I won't," said Laurie angrily. "I was sorry about Meg, and I asked her to forgive me, but I won't do it again when I'm not the one who is wrong. He ought to believe me when I say I can't tell him something. I don't like being shaken like that, and I won't go down until he apologizes."
"Listen, if I get your grandfather to apologize for shaking you, will you go down?" said Joe.
"Yes, but you won't do it," answered Laurie.
"If I can manage the young one, then I can manage the old one," Joe said to herself as she went downstairs.
"Come in," said Mr. Lawrence when she knocked on his door.
"It's me, sir," said Joe. "I'm returning a book."
"Do you want any more?"
said the old man, looking annoyed, but trying not to show it.
"Yes, please," said Joe, and she pretended to look for another book while Mr. Lawrence stared at her crossly.
"What's that boy been doing?"
he asked suddenly.
He won't tell me.
He did do something wrong, and we forgave him, said Joe. But we all promised not to say a word to anyone.
He must not hide behind a promise from you soft-hearted girls, said the old gentleman. Tell me, Joe.
I can't, sir, because Mother has ordered me not to, said Joe. And if I tell you, it will make trouble for someone else, not Laurie. This seemed to calm the old man.
Then I'll forgive him, he said after a moment. He's a difficult boy, and hard to manage, you know.
So am I, said Joe. But a kind word always helps.
You think I'm not kind to him? He said, sharply.
Too kind, very often, said Joe, a little afraid, but just a bit quick to be angry with him sometimes. The old gentleman looked a little ashamed.
You're right. I am. Although I love the boy, I find it hard to be patient with him sometimes. Bring him down and tell him it's all right. I'm sorry I shook him.
Why not write him an apology, sir? Said Joe. He says he won't come down until he's got one. Mr. Lawrence gave her another sharp look, but then smiled and put on his glasses.
Here, give me a bit of paper, he said.
The words were written, and Joe kissed the old man's cheek. Then she went upstairs and put the letter under Laurie's door. But he came out before she was gone.
Well done, Joe, he said. Did he shout at you?
No, he was quite calm, said Joe. Now, go and eat your dinner. You'll both feel better after it. Everyone thought the matter was ended, but although others forgot it, Meg remembered. She never talked about Laurie's tutor, but she thought of him often and dreamed her dreams. And once, when Joe was looking for something in her sister's desk, she found a bit of paper with Mrs. John Brooke written on it over and over again. Oh, dear, said Joe.
Chapter 14. Happier Days. Christmas Day was very different that year. Beth felt much better and was carried to the window to see the snowman which Joe and Laurie had made. It had a basket of fruit and flowers in one hand and a new piece of music in the other. Laurie ran up and down, bringing in the presents, and Joe sang a funny song.
I'm so happy, laughed Beth, as Joe carried her back to the other room to rest after the fun. Oh, I do wish that Father was here, too.
Half an hour later, Laurie came to the house and opened the door quietly.
Here's another Christmas present for the March family, he called out.
He moved away, and in his place appeared a tall man, holding the arm of another tall man, who tried to say something, but couldn't.
Father! Cried Meg and Joe together, and Mr. March disappeared under lots of loving arms and kisses.
Mr. Brooke kissed Meg, by mistake, as he tried to explain. Suddenly, the door to the other room opened, and there was Beth, running straight into her father's arms. There were tears of happiness on many faces before all the excitement died down. Then Mrs. March thanked Mr. Brooke for taking care of her husband
and he and Laurie left the family to themselves. Mr. March and Beth sat in one big armchair, and the others sat around them. I wanted to surprise you all, and the doctor let Mr. Brooke bring me home, said Mr. March. John has been so good to me. He is an excellent young man. Mr. March looked at Meg, who was staring at the fire. Then he smiled at his wife. She smiled back. Joe understood exactly what the smiles were saying and went out to the kitchen complaining to herself about excellent young men with brown eyes. There never was a Christmas dinner like the one they had that day. Mr. Lawrence and his grandson ate with them, and so did Mr. Brooke. Joe gave the tutor many black looks and would not speak to him, which amused Laurie. The guests left early, and the happy family sat together around the fire. A year ago, we were complaining about the awful Christmas we expected to have. Do you remember? Said Joe.
It's been quite a good year, said Meg, thinking about Mr. Brooke.
I think it's been a hard one, said Amy.
I'm glad it's over, because we've got Father back, whispered Beth, who was sitting on his knee.
I've discovered several things about you young ladies today, said Mr. March.
Oh, tell us what they are, cried Meg.
Here's one, he said, taking her hand. It had a small burn on the back and two or three little hard places on the front. I remember when this hand was white and smooth. It was pretty then, but to me it's much prettier now. I'm proud of this hard-working hand, Meg.
What about Joe? Whispered Beth. She's tried so hard and has been very, very good to me.
He smiled and looked at Joe sitting opposite. Her hair may be short, but I see a young lady now. Her face is thin and white from worrying, but it has grown gentler. Perhaps I'll miss my wild girl, but I'm sure I'll love the warm-hearted woman who has taken her place. Joe's face was red in the firelight as she listened.
Now, Beth, said Amy.
She's not as shy as she used to be, said her father lovingly, and he held Beth close when he remembered how near they had come to losing her. Then he looked down at Amy by his feet. I've noticed today that Amy has helped everyone patiently and with a smile. She's learned to think more about other people and less about herself. Beth moved out of her father's arms and went to the piano. She touched the keys softly and began to sing. Soon, the others joined her in a happy Christmas song. The next afternoon, Joe and Meg were sitting at the window when Laurie went by. When he saw Meg, he fell on one knee in the snow, beat his chest, and put out his arms towards her. When Meg told him to go away, he pretended to cry before walking away looking miserable. Meg laughed.
What was he doing? She said.
He was showing you how your John will act, answered Joe crossly.
Don't say my John. It isn't right.
But Meg said the words again, silently, inside her head. If he asks you to marry him, you'll cry or look stupid instead of saying aloud no, said Joe.
No, I won't, said Meg. I'll say, thank you, Mr. Brooke. You are very kind, but I am too young to marry you,
Please let us be friends, as we were.
I don't believe it, said Joe.
It's true. Then I'll walk out of the room with my head high. Meg got up and pretended to do it, but ran back to her seat when she heard someone knock on the door. Joe opened it with an angry look.
Good afternoon, said Mr. Brooke. I came to get my umbrella, which I left behind yesterday.
I'll get it, said Joe, pushing past him.
Now Meg can tell him, she thought.
But Meg was moving to the door.
I expect Mother will want to see you, she said.
I'll call her.
Don't go, he said. Are you afraid of me, Meg?
How can I be afraid when you've been so kind to Father? Said Meg. I wish I could thank you for it.
You can, he said. And he took Meg's small hand in his and looked at her lovingly.
Oh, please don't, she said, looking frightened.
I only want to know if you love me a little, Meg, he said gently. I love you so much.
This was the moment to repeat the words she had told Joe, but Meg forgot them all.
I don't know,
she said, so softly that John had to move closer to hear her reply. He smiled gratefully.
Will you try to find out?
I'm too young, she said, hesitating, but feeling her heart beating rather fast.
I'll wait while you learn to like me, he said. Will it be very difficult?
Not if I choose to learn, she said.
Please choose, Meg. I love to teach, and this is easier than German, said John, taking her other hand.
She looked at him and saw that he was smiling. He seemed so sure of success that Meg became a little annoyed. She felt excited and strange, and taking her hands away from his, she said, I don't choose. Please go away. Poor Mr. Brooke looked shocked.
Do you mean that?
Yes, she said, rather enjoying the game she was playing. I don't want to think about these things. It's too soon.
I'll wait until you've had more time, he said,
and looked so unhappy that Meg began to feel sorry for him. It was at this moment that Aunt March came in. She had come to see Mr. March and was hoping to surprise the family. She did surprise two of them. Meg, with her face bright red, just stared at her aunt, while Mr. Brooke hurried into another room.
Goodness me! What's all this?
Cried Aunt March. It's Father's friend, said Meg hurriedly. I'm so surprised to see you, Aunt March.
I can see that,
said Aunt March, sitting down.
What has he said to make your face turn pink?
Mr. Brooke and I were just talking, said Meg.
Brooke? The boy's tutor? Oh, I understand now. I know all about it because I made Joe tell me. You haven't promised to marry him, have you, Meg? If you have, you won't get one bit of my money, do you hear?
It was exactly the wrong thing to say. When Meg was ordered not to marry John Brooke, she immediately decided that she would. "I'll marry whoever I want to, Aunt March, and you can give your money to anyone you like," she said.
"You'll be sorry,"
said Aunt March.
"Why don't you marry a rich man to help your family?"
"Father and mother like John, although he's poor," said Meg.
"Be sensible, Meg," said her aunt. "He knows I have money, and that's why he likes you, I suspect."
"Don't say that," said Meg. "My John wouldn't marry for money any more than I would. We'll work and wait, and I'll be happy with him because he loves me, and..."
Meg stopped as she remembered that she had told her John to go away. Aunt March was very angry.
"Just don't expect anything from me when you are married," she said.
And she went out of the room, banging the door behind her. Meg didn't know whether to laugh or cry. Before she could decide, Mr. Brooke came back in from the next room and put his arms around her. "Oh, Meg, I could hear your voices," he said. "Thank you for proving that you do love me a little."
"I didn't know how much until she said those things about you," said Meg.
"So I can stay and be happy," he said.
"Yes, John,"
she whispered, and hid her face on John's chest. Joe returned and found them like that. Meg jumped and turned round, but John Brooke laughed and kissed the shocked Joe, saying, "Sister Joe, wish us luck." Joe ran upstairs to find her parents.
"Go down quickly," she said. "John Brooke is behaving terribly, and Meg likes it."
Mr. and Mrs. March left the room in a hurry, while Joe threw herself on the bed and told the awful news to Beth and Amy. But the little girls thought it was all most interesting and delightful. Nobody knew what was said that afternoon, but a lot of talking was done. The quiet Mr. Brooke managed to persuade his friends that his plans were good and sensible. Then he proudly took Meg in to supper. Everyone looked so happy that Joe tried to look pleased too. After supper, Laurie arrived with some flowers for Mrs. John Brooke. Then he followed Joe into the corner of the room while the others went to welcome old Mr. Lawrence. "What's the matter, Joe?" said Laurie. "You don't look very happy."
"Nothing will ever be the same again," said Joe sadly. "I've lost my dearest friend."
"You've got me," said Laurie.
"I'm not good for much, but I promise I'll always be your friend, Joe."
"I know you will," answered Joe gratefully. "Then don't be sad," he said. "I'll be back from college in 3 years' time, and then we'll go abroad or on a nice trip somewhere. Wouldn't that cheer you up?"
"Anything can happen in 3 years," said Joe.
"That's true," said Laurie. "Don't you wish you knew what was going to happen?"
"I don't think so," said Joe. "It may be something sad, and everyone looks so happy now." As she spoke, she looked round the room, and her face brightened at the sight. Father and mother sat happily together. Amy was drawing a picture of Meg and John, who were looking lovingly at each other. Beth lay on the floor, talking to her old friend, Mr. Lawrence. Jo sat in her favorite chair with a serious, quiet look on her face. Lori smiled at her in the long mirror that was opposite them both, and Jo smiled back. End of side 2.